Hello, good evening everyone. Welcome to the talk. Well done, you made it here on a Friday night with the exams piling up, assignments and due dates. Well done for being here. Give yourself a pat on the shoulder. You have made it. First step. So, interesting topic. Expectations, motivation, or stress driver? I got pretty stressed preparing for this talk. I was like, expectations. I don't really know what that means. I mean, I know what it means, but what did it actually imply or mean? And as per any other preparations for the talk, my first port of call was Google. And I typed, define expectations. And so this is the first hit that came up, okay? So, sounds like expectations is a strong belief that something will happen or be the case. And then they gave me a whole list of synonyms, including supposition, assumption, belief, presupposition, presumption, and the list goes on. But I took it that expectation is more like a kind of a projection, an idea. And I think there might be a difference between expectations and goals. Maybe. I think expectation is something you think about and the way you want it to happen, the way you envisage it or how you want it. It's a belief, right? And this may or may not be reality, the way it actually pans out. I think that's what expectation means. But to simplify it, I think expectation is a belief that things will happen in X way or you know, this particular way. Whereas a goal, I think, is according to the definition, is the object of a person's ambition or effort, an aim or desired result. Which, by this, it says, you know, there is an aim, so there has to be an intention of working towards, right? There should be some effort and motivation and plan moving towards a goal. And I think this is a difference between an expectation as opposed to a goal. I think the example that I can think of is more like, you know, a goal may be that I wish to gain enlightenment and I want to work towards this. Whereas an expectation is more like, I want to be enlightened, or you expect to be enlightened. But I think the difference is, when you don't get what you expected, you may get very frustrated. Whereas if you don't achieve your goal, I think you just continue to work towards it. And I think there is this famous saying that says, you know, you aim for the moon, and if you miss, you will be among the stars. Mm-hmm. Sounds great, especially for a talk. And believe me, and I find it very funny that when I was, you know, because I know of this phrase, but I don't know exactly how it's said. So when I again Googled this aim for the moon and something something stars, apparently our closest stars is the sun. So, you know, if you miss the sun, you're still among the planets as opposed to the other stars. But anyways, that's just me being a geek. So then of course this is a Buddhist talk, right? It's a Dharma talk. So I have to search something that is relevant to Buddhism, not just Google, right? Otherwise there's no credibility to what I'm saying. Which is actually a great resource, people, believe it or not. It's a website called Sutta Central. It actually is a huge collection of almost all the suttas by the Buddha that is now translated, and it's available in various languages. And I guess the benefit of modern technology is the search bar. I don't need to flip every book and go by index and let me see, expectations may be translated as wish, expectations, desire. So I can just search that word and I can come up with a lot of relevant things. I was actually quite surprised by, you know, because expectation, I think it's more of a English term, right? I don't know what the traditional Sanskrit or Pali term would be for expectation, or if there even was such a word called expectation in that language. So I was actually quite surprised that, hey, a hit came up. Yay! So I'll read this to you. So this came from the Numbered Sutta. And this is what the... they use the word, the translation used the words between expectations and hopes. Like there was, if you ever come across wisdom publications, Bhikkhu Bodhi did a lot of translations for the suttas. But there is also another venerable Sujato who also did his own translation. So you can expect that, you know, the language is slightly different but captures the same meaning. So I'll read this out to you. So this is as per the Buddha. There are the three kinds of people found in the world. In the same way, these three kinds of people are found among monks. What three? Okay. There is the hopeless, the hopeful, and the one who has done away with hope. Or in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation, there is the one with no expectations, the one with expectations, and the one who has done away with expectations. And what, monks, is a hopeless person or no expectations? It's when some person is unethical, of bad qualities, filthy, with suspicious behavior, underhand, and no true spiritual practitioner, although claiming to be one, rotten inside, corrupt and depraved. Wow. All right. And then they hear this and they say that this person so and so has realized the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life. So, and they live having realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilement. So clearly they don't have the qualities, but they claim to have done this. And it never occurs to them that, oh, when will I too realize the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life, and live having realized it with my own insight due to the ending of defilements. This is called a hopeless person. Have I confused you so far? All right. And then the second one is, what is a hopeful person? It is when this person is ethical, of good character. They hear this and they say that this monk so-and-so has realized the undefiled freedom of heart and freedom by wisdom in this very life. And they have lived, realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. And this occurs to them that, oh, when will I too realize the freedom and wisdom in this very life? This is called a hopeful person. And the last type of person is the one who has lived well, perfected it, and ended all defilements. All right, and they live well, realized it with their own insight due to the ending of defilements. And it will never occur to them that, oh, when will I too realize blah, blah, blah. Why is that? Because this person who had the former hope that they had to be freed has now died down because they have already achieved it. So in the first one is they have no character, horrible person, like by this description, they're horrible people, but they claim that they have achieved, right? To them, there is no hope that they will actually achieve it. The second type of person is working towards, has good practice, and then they have the hope that, oh, when will I achieve? And the last type is the one who has perfected it, ended all the defilements, and they no longer have this expectation or have to hope for it because they have already achieved it, right? So then these are the three kinds of people. So I found that this is an interesting sutta that I've never previously come across, had it not to prepare for this talk. But I think, you know, in order to actually have hope or to be able to even expect a certain outcome, there needs to be certain conditions there present in order for these particular things to happen. It cannot just happen randomly. For example, this one, the person who has bad quality, filthy, blah, 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 there is no hope, there is no conditions there for them to actually achieve enlightenment, or, you know, it's just not possible. It's going against what they're trying to achieve. Whereas the second one, who has put in the effort, has practiced, right? They have not perfected it, but they're working towards, right? So then there they are putting in the right conditions to actually to achieve something. And then there's the last type, who have already done what needs to be done, and they have now achieved. So the causes and conditions need to be right. There needs to be the right types of conditions through their efforts to actually achieve their goals, or to even be hopeful to achieve their goals, right? And I think of it this way, that, you know, I think the law of karma is there whether we like it or not, okay? So you have to put in, whatever you put in, you know, you will reap later on. So the right causes and conditions have to be put in for the result to be ripened, right? And I think often we get very stressed because we have very unrealistic expectations as well, such as the first one, right? They're of horrible character, yet they may think that they have achieved, which is not possible. So here's a story I heard of. So there's this person who's always grumbling, complaining, and he goes to his spiritual practitioner, his teacher, and say, you know, I've heard your talks, you know, I've done this, I've done that, you know, I've chanted the suttas more times than other people, you know, I've burned more incense than other people, I have probably given away more money than other people, but my life is not getting any better. And then the teacher says, and he has a sip of tea. And then he says, okay, all right, look, sorry to trouble you, but I will send you some money later on, okay? Say, huh? What? Why? No, what? No, you're the teacher. I won't accept any money from you. I said, no. I'm not giving you the money. I'll pass this to you because I need you to do something for me. So, oh, okay, yeah, sure, teacher. That's fine. I'll do anything. So, okay, I'll transfer you this $500 later. Okay. And I want you to help me buy a car. And the person's like, a car? Yeah, buy a car. How much? $500. Master, I don't know if you're up to date with the current market. But I don't think you can buy a car with $500. So, oh, you're so clever. You know that $500 cannot buy you a car. Okay. So the story actually ends there. But the point it's trying to make is, we often want to put in only a little bit of effort, but we want a lot of things to come out of that. We only want to study one chapter and pass our exams with high distinction. We only want to sleep 1 hour and be able to do everything else. Alright? So, you get what I'm trying to say? There is that very unrealistic expectation that we have. And I think this is probably the root of where stress comes from. Right? You know? And again, this goes back to the law of causes and conditions as well. Because, you know, you want to put in only so little bit, but get so much. It's just, it's not real, it's not practical, it's not realistic. So, But on the same note, we still need to do something to achieve what we would like to achieve. There is, you know, karma basically says, you know, if you put in negative actions, you get negative results. Or unwholesome actions will lead to unwholesome results. And if you put in wholesome actions, you lead to wholesome results. And needless to say, if you have no action, you have no results. Okay? So it is still important to put in your intention and to put in your actions in order to get something. You know, it's one thing to have expectations of putting in so little bit and get so much. And it's another thing that you have put in nothing and get something. I mean, I'm sure you've heard the story that, you know, someone prayed very hard to say, please let me win the lotto, please let me win the lotto, please let me win the lotto. It's gone up to like 100 million this week, you know. Please let me win the lotto. And then finally, someone answered. You know, this in the middle of the night, this very, you know, the lights are off, can't see anyone, no shadow. Suddenly, there's a voice that goes straight into this person and say, I would like you to win the lotto. Yes, thank you. But please buy a ticket. You cannot win a lotto without even trying to buy a ticket, okay? If you have no effort, if you have no actions, you will get nothing, okay? So again, I will quote another sutta. That this is the sutta is quite long, but this top section really just says that to develop the basis for spiritual power, right? The bhikkhu develops the basis for spiritual power that possesses concentration due to desire and volitional formations of striving, which is also, in the other translation, is through enthusiasm and active effort. Right? I think this really drives home the point that there has to be, you have to be motivated, you have to be enthusiastic, you have to want to achieve this, and you have to put in active effort, the right effort as well. All right, you can think about it all you want, and I think this is probably what expectation is. You can think about it and you can expect it, but without the actions, you're not going to achieve anything, really. All right, and so now that we think that okay, all right, we have to put in this effort, we have to put this into action, and then, you know, you start getting a little bit excited initially, maybe motivated, and then it builds up, you know, you're moving faster, you're doing more research, these sort of things, and then you're doing really well, and then comes a point where you become overpowered because you're too anxious, because you're overthinking about things as well. So there is this Yerkes-Dodson law that will just, so it's a graph. I'm sure some of you may have come across already. This is performance. And this is strong. And this is weak. This is level of arousal. I hope this is whiteboard. Low. And this is high. Basically, this is the graph. Simple. End of story. So, what this is trying to say is, when you have very low arousal or energy levels, you know, the performance is quite low, yeah? And then you start putting in more energy or arousal or motivation or whatever you call it, and then you start performing a bit better and better until one point where then it actually is then counterproductive. If you have too much excitement, then, you know, the performance actually starts to drop, yeah?
this, see, you guys seen this before, heard of this before, maybe not in a graph form, but and I think it's, in a way, it's quite true, and it probably is some degree common sense, but we just probably never thought about it much. So, say for example, you know, maybe more on a, do you guys drink coffee? Tea? Yeah, coffee or tea, something, a stimulant, yeah? Have you ever had that one time where you had too much? What happens?
Headache.
What happened to your, can you feel your heart pounding?
Yeah.
Yes. What happens to your hands?
Shaking.
Sweating. Even the bathroom is overtime. You're busting to go. You may have diarrhea. Yeah, is that familiar? Has that ever happened before? Yeah. I think it's pretty similar, right? Like if you have too much, and you know, those times, do you find that you can actually focus on what you're trying to do? Maybe you have to, it feels like you have to work even harder to try and concentrate, yeah? But have you ever had that time where, you know, you think you slept okay, but you're a little bit tired in the morning, and then you have your first cup of coffee, and then how do you feel?
Awake,
just right. You know, it feels like I can do anything in the world right now. It's just the right amount. I've slept well. I'm awake. My eyes are shining. Palpitations haven't set in yet. My hands is not shaky yet, but I feel awake. You know, I actually look at my lecture notes and I can actually read the words and I can actually understand them. I mean, I don't understand the whole sentence, but I can read each word. That's a start, isn't it? So I think, again, this comes down to, if you have too much, it's not a good thing. But if you don't have, if you're already used to drinking coffee, and that morning, you know, for me, on weekends, I try and stay away from coffee. And you can ask my family how I am on the weekends. Especially on the Saturday, my first day without coffee, how I'm like, can you do this? No, go away. Like, you know. Oh, you know we should go shopping. We can just buy online. Why do we have to go out? So again, then it becomes that the level of arousal is too low. So I'm not productive there, and I'm not productive when I have too much. But when you just hit it right, then, you know, you're super productive at that time. Whatever it is you're doing, okay? But of course, coffee is a, you know, it's a substance, right? Whether for you, whether it's tea. But sometimes mentally, you know, if you're very tired, you're very down, you're very low, nothing much happens. But sometimes when you imagine yourself, you know, being on top of the world, you're overly excited. Again, you actually have to put in extra effort. I find that you need to put in extra effort just to bring yourself back to reality and actually get better control of what's going on. So I think apart from just stress and motivation, I think there is also that energy level. And I just read this in another sutta as well, where I think it's quite applicable. These were instructions by the Buddha to a monk, but I think it's very applicable to ourselves in daily life as well. Of course, the instructions might be different or what suits you, but I think the principle is quite applicable. So do we all know who is Venerable Moggallana? Yes? No? Okay. So during the Buddha's time, he had lots of disciples, and there are some that are more prominent. So Venerable Moggallana is supposed to be the foremost in psychic abilities. There is Venerable Sariputta, who is supposed to be the foremost in wisdom.
or expounding the teachings as well. And then there are various others. But Venerable Mongalana was foremost in psychic abilities or spiritual powers. It is said that, you know, his abilities are so wonderful that even when his toe just touched a building, the whole building shook. Like, that's how amazing and wonderful he is. And you would think that, wow, such a well-practiced master, you know, he must have had lots of good karma, he must have, you know, have a lot of talent and things like that. But these are actually, this is one of the things when that happened. So, before he was fully enlightened, but after listening to the Buddha's teachings, he was trying to contemplate on them and practice meditation. And then the moment he sat down, he was... And then the Buddha, using his own abilities, showed up in front of Mogalana. And he said, "Are you nodding off, Mogalana? Are you nodding off?" He said, "Yes, sir." I think I deleted some parts. But anyways, he said a few things and then he said, "Recite in detail the teachings as you've learned and memorized it. It's possible that you give up drowsiness in this way." And "Don't focus on or cultivate the perception that you were meditating on when you felt drowsy." So in other words, he started off with maybe, say, the breath, okay? And then he started getting drowsy. He said, and then, so the Buddha then told him, okay, instead of focusing on what you were focusing on initially, okay, I want you to recite in detail the teaching as you've learned and memorized it. It's possible that you'll give up drowsiness this way. But what if this still doesn't work? Then think about and consider the teaching as you've learned and memorized it. Okay? But what if this still doesn't work? All right? Pinch your ears and rub your limbs. All right? Getting more physical now. All right? But what if this still doesn't work? Okay. Get up from your seat. Flush your eyes with water. Look around in every direction. Look up at the stars and constellations. It's possible that you give up drowsiness this way. Okay. What if it still doesn't work? Then focus on the perception of light, concentrating on the perception of day, regardless of whether it's night or day. Right. So I don't know how you all were when we were doing meditation just now. Maybe you were very awake. Maybe you were very sleepy. I mean, if you think back to your experiences of when you were very drowsy, you know, what kind of, describe to me what kind of feelings or images or things that you see or feel, you know. Alright. Anyone would care to share some of their feelings, sensations when you start feeling drowsiness set in? Probably not, but that's okay. I don't know about... Huh?
Bored?
Yeah. Do you feel that it's more heavy or light?
Heavy.
Heavy? Is it more bright or more dark?
Dark.
Dark, yeah? Yeah. So, you know, I think these instructions were like, focus on the perception of light. So maybe it's something that we're used to or conditioned to, but when you see a candle light, when you, and I guess these days, just take out your phone, just poof. And if you can't sleep in the middle of the night, the worst thing you can do is look at your phone. Like, you will be more awake. And then you start going, look at that cat. No, you're not going to sleep. All right, focus on perception of light. So if you're feeling very drowsy, you're feeling very heavy, actually, let me ask another question then. Say towards the end when I started asking you to invoke a sense of loving kindness, did that feel a little bit more wakeful than sometime in between when you were more drowsy? Yeah? And was it more engaging when you felt when I said things like, you know, spread this to the person next to you, in front of you, behind of you, and then you started having these pictures, right? This imagination, whether you open your eyes, and then you started imagining, I don't know what you imagine, but, you know, to me, it's more like a ball of light, some sort of brightness, yeah? And then you know, you spread it to the room, and then the room feels like it's a bit brighter, even though nothing has changed physically. And then the campus, and then the world, and so on. So that sense of energy has changed. Initially, when you were very tired, it was very heavy, it was very dark. But even if you imagine a ball of light, or loving kindness, or something like that, then it shifts. And then it's a little bit lighter, and maybe also because I'm getting the mind to do more things. Right, before it was like, stay still, stay focused. Now it's more like, okay, I want you to think about this, imagine this, picture this, you know. And it's not just picture this and then stop. It's picture this and let's keep moving to the room, you know, the campus, the suburb, and so on and so forth. So then this concentration, this whole perception starts to change, and then it gets a little bit brighter, and then you're more awake. Your energy levels are lifted up, even for a little bit, but it's still lifted up a bit. Yeah? But if this still doesn't work, then walk meditation. Okay? You start getting more and more physical now. Wash your face, doesn't quite work, start walking, start moving, okay? And if it still doesn't work, then lie down in the lion's posture on the right side, placing one foot on the other, mindful and aware, and focused on the time of getting up. Okay, not just lie down and stop. Lie down and focus on the time of getting up. And when you wake, you should get up quickly thinking, I will not live attached to the pleasures of sleeping, lying down, and drowsing. That's how you should train. I guess, you know, practical things. If in the end you're very tired, and I don't know, maybe you haven't slept for 2 days, you're rushing for an assignment. Maybe you've had too much coffee the night before and you couldn't sleep. Maybe you're a bit unwell, you're sick. So there are various causes and conditions, but if you're truly very tired, have a rest. Okay, but don't just I'm going to sleep. Like, focused on the time of getting up. Okay, so there's also that's still that sense of enthusiasm there, I suppose. Like first thing when you wake up, you still want to keep going. All right, so I think this is a great. Well, when I first read it, I was pretty motivated because. I always imagine all these great masters to be, you know, they're fully attained, they're well practiced, you know, there's no problems, they've overcome all the difficulties. But it's very humbling to know that they struggle with the same things that we struggle day to day, right? And if they've done it, then it's possible we can do it too, yeah? So, and I guess it really depends on how you are and what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and what works for you this day may not work the next day. It really depends on, you know, what's going on. Say, if you've had too much coffee, for example, it will wash out of your system, but you got to give it some time. There's no sense trying to work very hard to try that caffeine out of your system. It's just not physically possible, right? And then sometimes if you genuinely haven't slept well for a few days, maybe you do need that rest. Well, I know research has said that you incur sleep debt if you actually don't sleep well. And that may not be returned in just one day. So if you have not slept well for, I don't know, 3-4 days, you actually need that amount of time to actually catch up as well. So there are these sort of things that works in your condition. You know, it may not be applicable all the time. Yeah? Does that make sense so far? Yeah. So I think that's probably on that spectrum where the arousal is a bit too low, so that it's not productive. Yeah. I didn't find too many things talking about excitement, but there are some things in the Buddhist practice called the various hindrances when we try and practice. And these are attachment to pleasure or sensual pleasure, ill will, lethargy and drowsiness, which I think we've talked about. There is restlessness, and there is doubt. So I guess the restlessness is too much energy or too much arousal, or you know, whatever you call it, it's just restlessness. And there are various things that some of the teachers have talked about to try and overcome these hindrances. And especially for restlessness, you may want to change different activities. You may want to contemplate on some things like calmness of mind, tranquility. So earlier on at the start of the session, I gave some instructions to say, take in a big breath and exhale slowly. So I don't know if it works for you, but for me, I think that's a very useful practice to actually slow yourself down. And I know attending some of the retreats before, some of these monks would take, because I used to attend as a student, right? And you know, as students, we never go to sleep, we stay up late, it feels like we've had lots of energy. And then I'll bet the monk is like, oh my gosh, there's this not just one or two, there's like 30 or 40 of you guys. What am I going to do with you asking you guys to sit down and meditate for 2 hours? It's not possible. So it took us on bushwalks. But the instructions weren't just, yeah, go to the bush, run. It's more, okay, follow me. And then we do go on bushwalks. We don't talk. But the instructions were still focus on your breath. And I tell you, the first part of the bushwalk was just, yeah, easy, because it was all going downhill. And as you know, if you go downhill, you have to come back up at some point. And try focusing on your breath and not talking when you're coming uphill. You'll be like... It's very hard not to focus on your breath, because, you know, it's just, you're tired, okay? You're working harder, it's uphill, you're gasping for air, you know, and then you realize that I haven't exercised for 6 months. I'm dying. but strangely, it worked. Why? Because we were so full of energy, and then all of a sudden, we're using all of our energy and we're just focusing on our breath. Now, granted, the nature of the breath was very coarse. You know, it's... say if you started running after a bus, right? And after you got on the bus, you'll be going... Right? And then after you've caught your breath, then you start to slow down and your breath goes... And then finally, when you're all settled down in the nice air conditioning and you go... You then start... You don't even notice your breath. Yeah? So I guess what I'm trying to say is there are these different techniques that you want to do to try and bring your over anxious, restless nature back to a more calm state, okay? And I guess really the best judge of what state you're in is really how you are. Like, you know, we can make a guess, but you know how you feel inside. If you're tired, maybe you want to go for a walk, right? And if you're restless, maybe you want to go for a run and then slow down. Yeah, these sort of things, and it's all a bit of a balancing act. But to get your optimal performance, then it's really that that right amount of energy to and your intent to actually bring it to where you want it to be. Good. Any questions so far? No, not lost. Very good. And then I thought of, okay, so with expectations, right, isn't there, there's a sense of attachment and there's a sense of wanting or desire? Because one of the common things we often hear about is, you know, we're trying to be Buddhists, or we are Buddhists, shouldn't we let go of desire? Isn't desire bad? Not necessarily, because I think desire is just, there can be good desires, and there could be obviously bad desires. And I looked up the Pali word for it, and in the definitions, there's actually, they can be neutral, or they can be good, and they can be bad. So it's just an energy, a wanting, a motivation. It doesn't necessarily mean that all desires are bad. And I had the opportunity to consult with a senior monk when I drove him from work the other day for the talk. I just asked him, you know, there's this term in Pali language, you know, it's desire, is it always a bad thing? He said, no. So there's the desire which, you know, there's the desire for sensual pleasures, which is frowned upon, of course, by the monastics. And then there's the desire for doing good things. And that's okay. So it really comes down to what your intention is. And I think, going back to this, I think the intention actually is the biggest thing that determines whether it is a motivation or it becomes stressful for you. Yeah? That's right. So, it's like this. Say, for example, we are preparing for an event. Right? Bodhi Night. Bodhi Night is coming up. It's the biggest event of the year for Unibats. You know, it's a major event involving many people. And we're all trying to do our best to spread the teachings of the Buddha in different contexts. Yep. But you know, many people join the preparation of Bodhi Night with a very different mindset. And that comes back to your intent. Very popular among students is often they say that, and I want to take part in Bodhi Night because I want to develop my organizational skills. I want to, you know, pick up leadership skills. I want to lead a team. You know. And with that intent, then the viewpoint becomes very narrow-minded. They're no longer thinking of the big picture. They're no longer thinking of, I would like to spread the teachings to as many people as possible. It becomes what I want to learn. I want to be the leader. I want to develop the skills. I want this so that I can put it on my CV and I can get a job. And I heard that at one point in time, apparently participating in Unibats, it actually looks pretty good on the CV. It's actually accepted. I know. Great, right? Woohoo! But for that, if we develop that kind of intent, or we join this because of that reason, then, you know, I think for a start, we probably lose sight of what we want to do. I mean, what the event is trying to achieve. You know, you may learn excellent skills, you may lead a team of 50 people, but maybe the event turns out to be horrible. You know, but you don't care because all I want is, I want to learn XYZ skills. I want to learn to lead. Yeah? Then we lose sight of the big picture. Or maybe, and often not surprising, is, you know, people want to join Bodhi Night because it's fun and they're potentially looking for boyfriend or girlfriend. Then again, this becomes very stressful. Why? Because everything that you try and do is not so much that you can portray the Dharma, it's more, I hope that person sees me and get impressed. I want to look good on stage. I can hit that exceptionally high note. I want to impress someone. I want someone to hear my voice, alright? Are you guys listening? I'm about to sing. Shh. Alright. Then everything you do, your intention, your motivation, every action, everything you say, it becomes, you want to impress someone, you want to let someone see you, hear you, feel that you're great. And apart from missing the big picture, who knows, you might get very disheartened because that person hasn't noticed you. You know, I sang so well, oh, but that person wasn't there that day to see me sing. Oh. You know, that's, then it becomes more stressful, doesn't it? Like, it's, you're always looking for a reward. You're looking for something out of your ego, your selfishness. It can get pretty stressful. And I thought of this analogy from my work, which is medicine, of course. I often get asked, you have these patients who come in sick, you know, they've got fevers, we think there's an infection somewhere, and, might be the chest, might be this, might be that, and then we start some antibiotics, and then they're not getting better, and then the patient or the family comes to you and say, you started this yesterday, they're not better. I'm like, in my mind, I'm thinking, of course, give it time. It's not a wonder drug, like give it time. But of course, I don't say that because I have to be professional, right? Anyways, can we give more? It's like, yeah, sure, sometimes we can give more. Can you give more powerful antibiotics? Yeah, sure, sometimes we can do that. Can you just keep giving more and more and more? It's like, Then I asked the specialist, and then he said, look, I know this bacteria is pretty resistant, and yes, we can kill any bacteria if we give it high enough doses. So, okay, that's great. Yeah, but we might kill the person as well. So, good point. So our intention is not actually to kill bacteria, it's actually to treat the patient. Yeah, the right intent is important. Otherwise, sure, I'll be giving everyone antibiotics. Good luck, I'll kill the bacteria. Yay! Might kill you too. Just small side effect. That's fine. Don't worry about that. So our intent to treat, our intention, we have to set our intent right. Otherwise, we'd end up more stressed than we are motivated. And I think the best way to be motivated with doing something is to try and do it for the benefit of other people, right? Coming here, learning about Buddhism and trying to spread Buddhism. Why do we spread it? And, do we have to spread it? Well, you're all here for a reason. You're all here because maybe you find something helpful in the Buddhist teaching. Maybe it's brought you peace. Maybe it's led you out of trouble. The Buddha's laid down many, many teachings, and at the very basic, he talked about some precepts. The precept may sound like very harsh rules. It may feel very restricting for some people. Have we all heard of the precepts before? I'm not talking something new. Okay, great. But on the flip side, I think there was one of the monks said before that the translation of the word precepts in some terms is actually, cooling or calming. I thought, okay, that's quite interesting, because it usually sounds like a do not do this, do not do this. How is this cooling and calming? It's translated as cooling and calming because by not doing these things that lead you into trouble, you can have a peaceful life. And that internally, in your heart and mind, is going to be cooling because you're never going to be looking over the shoulder thinking, what have I done? You're not stressed. All right. The five precepts are what? Do not kill, do not steal, do not do sexual misconduct, no lying, and no intoxicating substances. I say substances because people argue whether it's just drinks or not. And I think if I say substances, it covers the whole range of things. It's easier that way. Don't get lost in translation. But if you do these things, you don't get in trouble. If you don't get in trouble, you're not worried. You're not worried, you're happy. You're happy, it's cooling and calming. It's good. But of course, you have to train yourself to see it that way, because most of the time as we start out, it's against our habitual tendencies. So then we feel that, ah, I can't do this. So, oh, it's just a little lie. Or, you know, it's just this paperclip from work. It's not stealing. Like, who cares? It's a paperclip. They've got hundreds more. Whatever. But, you know, these little habits, they can build up into something great. So we want to try and nib it at its butt. So things like the precepts, you benefit yourself, you benefit other people, leads you to have a happier life, isn't it? And so, but what is so good about spreading the teachings as well, it's if you felt something good about the Buddha's teachings, whether it's meditation, whether it's practicing generosity, whether it's just staying out of trouble, right? If it has benefited you and you're happier, maybe you want to share it with someone you care or someone that you don't know, right? Because if it's brought you that happiness and peace, it's probably worth sharing with someone else so that they can be happy and at peace too, right? I think we've got enough problems in the world as it is. Stress rates are going up. Suicide rates are going up. There's all these ridiculous shootings in US. You know, I'm glad we don't have that many problems with guns in this country. But potentially, you know, you always every now and again you see someone stressed enough to drive a car into CBD pedestrians. It's pretty stressful. So, you know, it may not be that extreme. Say if your friend's struggling for exams and you know the answer or you know how to do it, you know, you don't think too hard to like, oh yeah, come on, I'll show you how it's done. You know, you benefited someone. All right. And then we often talk about things only academically. But day-to-day life, you know, you don't carry your textbook everywhere. You're not always academic. Outside of school, there's lots of things. That's your life, right? And if you feel that you're happy and you've benefited, I think it's probably worthwhile to share, yeah. And that's the thing about sharing something good, right? Doesn't really matter if they take it up or not. You know, you've done what you can. It may be something as simple as patting someone on the back. It may be telling someone, hey, there's this thing going on. You want to go for the talk? Might be something like Bodhi night. It's fun. It's great food. Yummy. It's not that expensive. You know, the other day I bought a USB cable for $15. It's a non-member price for Bodhi night that includes dinner. It's pretty good. That's entertainment. And I learned something there as well, right? So if it's something helpful, useful, you know, it's no harm sharing with someone else. And what's the worst? They're like, yeah, I'm not free. Like, okay, it's all right. If you're not free, then so be it. Are you really not free, though? But okay, well, if they've got something on, then so be it. Maybe 5 years down the track, they finally say, you know, actually, I'm looking for, you know, I'm thinking of something. I'm looking for some answers. I'm pretty frustrated with things. I want to learn something. And then they remember, oh, yeah, there's this, my friend told me this thing, this person, this place, this center, this event. Yeah, maybe I'll go for it, see what comes out. And if anything, you would have planted that seed in there. I'm not asking you to do Inception. Have you watched the movie Inception? Yeah? Yes? Yes? Planting an idea? I'm not asking you to go into the dream world and like start spinning a top and do Inception. It's just like, there's something good, right? Just share it. No harm. And also the truth is, I guess, if we're all very passive and we don't share these things, then this good message, I think, just starts to dwindle and then just eventually will die out. So, and I think that that's something that's quite motivational because you do it out of the goodness of your heart, and if it works, great. And if the other person hasn't taken it up, then sure, maybe the time's not right. Maybe the conditions are not right at that time. But maybe one day down the track, they'll remember it and they'll do it. Yeah. So, I think that's probably a more inspiring thing. That's right, inspiring rather than just motivational. It's inspiring. And I think that often, before we even start, we give ourselves stress And we build our own inner barriers before we even try. There's this book written by a monk, which is Buddhist views on prosperity and wealth or something like that. And inside, one of the things that this monk has mentioned is actually about believing in your abilities and actually, again, setting your views right. Say, for example, so you gave the example like this. Back in India, back in those days in India, there is the caste system. You're all familiar with it, heard of it, yeah? So there's, you know, no one actually said that the caste system is real, but everyone believes it that way. No one, you know what I mean? Like, if you're born in this caste, you cannot do these things, or you have to do these things. So there's no physical caste system that puts them in this box and say you cannot leave this box. It's a belief, and it's so deeply ingrained in them that they don't even try and do anything to be out of it. You know, it's like the moment someone's born, they open their eyes, that's it. That's what you're told to believe, and they believe it to the very end, until they die, right? This essentially, and the Buddha in that time worked very hard to break out of that caste system. There was no caste in the Buddhist order, right? The only thing that they respect is by the seniority of who entered the Sangha order or the monastic order. In fact, he even used this as a training ground. So in his time, there were when he was still a prince, there were some fellow princes or wealthy people or things like that, right? And they all, after he became enlightened, they were all pretty interested in learning as well. But I think in his wisdom, he saw that these people still had a sense of arrogance in them. They still felt that they were more superior. So he actually told them, good, I will enter you into the monastic order, but just give me a few days, all right? Just hold on, okay? And what he did is he went to this barber. This barber was of low caste, supposedly low caste, okay? And he was so happy that as a low caste person, he could actually learn the teachings, right? And so the Buddha actually ordained this barber first, okay? And then he went back to these people and said, okay, time, the right time now, okay, come shave your head, we'll enter you into the order. Okay, so now that they've entered, and the person they've encountered was this barber that they've looked down on before. But because he's entered the order, the Sangha, the monastic order, before they have, he is more senior than them, in that sense. I think in a practical sense, seniority usually represents that they're more well-practiced. Not necessarily just because they're more senior, but because they're more well-practiced. But anyways, now that this barber has entered the order before them, they have to pay respects to him. And in that moment, it's a very powerful, humbling experience. Doesn't matter what you show on the outside, but the fact is, you have to kneel down and pay respects to this person that in your previous life you have looked down upon. And there is no caste, right? It's just a matter of you are more, ideally you are more well-practiced, you are more senior than they are. So breaking through that inner barrier, right, that thought, you know, because how many times have, you tried to study for an exam, and there's this crippling thought that says, I only have 5 hours left or one night left. How am I supposed to finish this chapter? Oh, look, there are another 5 chapters after this. I know I struggled with this myself when I was going through med school. I looked at that anatomy textbook and I'm like, I'm not going to remember what the trapezius attaches to the... And they're all Latin or whatever words. They're not even English. I was like, can't they just say the muscle that attaches from this bone at this part to that part? No, they have to say the zygomatic arch is attached to this cerebellum peduncle that connects the... How am I supposed to regurgitate this in the exams? But I find that then I start stressing out, and then I start walking around in my little room. I was living in a hostel. I was just pacing around in my little room, and then I come back, and I've just realized that 15 minutes has gone in me doing nothing except just worrying and walking around that little room. Not helpful, okay? And then there were some times when I sat down and I'm like, okay, I will do this. I'm not going to look at the watch, all right? Doesn't matter. I have some time left, and I just go into it, and I start memorizing. And then I look up at the watch like, oh, it's only been 5 minutes. Had I actually spent that 5 minutes focusing, I would not have wasted 15 minutes doing nothing. And it's all because of this crippling thought that I'm out of time. I cannot do this. I am too tired. You know, this will never work. You know, all these is just beliefs that I made up that is of no help at all. So to be able to see things as they are and to deconstruct this inner barriers, right? Had I believed in my own abilities at that time, I would have saved more time and probably got better grades than I did. I still passed though. Right. I'm registered, don't worry. But yes, so if we're able to do that, then with the right intention and the right amount of energy, right, I think we can be motivated. I think, you know, and I think, you know, it's nice to say that don't get stressed, but I think the right amount of stress is probably helpful, okay? If I tell all of you students now to say, ah, relax, it's okay, you'll be fine. No, you will not be fine, okay? Whatever I say now, you will go home and you still go back and you'll be like, I'm stressed. Of course you're stressed, right? You've got somewhere you want to be, you've got some grades that you want to achieve, you know, telling you that don't worry about it, you'll get it. It's not gonna magically solve the problem. You still have to rely on yourself. You still have to work hard for it, of course. Just saying, you know, praying or begging may help calm you down a little bit, but it's not going to solve the problem. So there's another Zen story that I've come across, which is pretty funny. So there's this person who wanted something really bad, okay? Whatever it is, maybe a new car, maybe he wants a child, maybe he wants to, you know, win the lottery, whatever, okay? So he was told by someone that, you know, there's this pretty famous or, there's this very famous place that you can go to pray to the Guanyin statue or Avalokiteshvara, one of the Buddhist figures or Bodhisattvas. That's, and the thing about Guanyin Bodhisattva is her vow or her aspiration is of compassion, great compassion, all right? And you may have seen some images where they have the thousand hands. So it's got 1,000 hands because she tries to reach out and help as many beings as possible. So of course you have a wish, you know, you go to ask the right bodhisattva, right? You know, you don't try and ask the one that says do it yourself. You're like, oh, please help me, right? So then he goes to this mountain top, you know, long way up, and then this little temple that sits inside. And he goes in, puffing and puffing, and then I finally he's like, okay, all right, I'm going to start my prayer. Praying, 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 praying. It's a quiet place, it's up the top of the mountain, it's a weekday, whatever, it's quiet, right? And then he hears a noise, like, never mind, let's just keep praying, 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 praying. And then he can't help his curiosity, right? Like, it's very quiet place, you will notice someone else. So it takes a peek and continues. And then he has a realization, it's like, hang on, this person looks just like that statue. So, but he still can't help himself, and he goes, I can't help but wonder you look like a striking image of, you know, Guan Yin Bodhisattva that I'm praying to. Do you happen to be Guan Yin? And then the person says, yes, I am. So, amazed. But then, you know, as skeptical as he is, then he said, well, if you're Guan Yin, how come you're praying to yourself? I said, oh, because I've learned that if you want to do something right, you have to do it yourself. There's no sense in praying to other people. You have to do it yourself. That's why I'm here, praying to myself. All right? It sounds a little bit more elegant in Mandarin. But anyways, you get the point. That if you want to do it right, you still have to put in the effort yourself. You can ask people for help, you can get some influence, but it's you who has to put in the effort, right? So, with the right intention, all right, the right effort, the right amount, okay, and set your goals right, I think it's possible to be more of a motivation than of stress. And again, this saying that, I mean, you have to aim high, don't you? You have to aim for the stars, all the sun. And if you miss, you'll still be among the stars, all the planets, one of them. You're in a high place, okay? You do well. All right? Good. That's all that I have for you tonight. Happy to take questions. But otherwise... Yes?
So I think I've been having that inner boundary problem. So I get really stressed before I do stuff. So when I actually place that, like the amount of tasks that I need to do, then I'll get really stressed. And like what you did for like that 3 minutes, for me it's an hour or even more. So it takes quite a long time to actually stop myself and think. Do you have any tips for that?
I must say, studying is not my strong point myself. I have struggled with my studies. But I suppose in my line of work, things can get very busy very quickly and very stressed because... you know, there's often a timeline, and the end of the timeline is not really a result, it's whether someone lives or dies. So, I guess the bottom line really is everyone's different. So what works for me may not work for you. But I guess the general principles still apply, that one thing that I found often is meditation. Now, I'm not saying, you know, and this may not be the right time to go deep into meditation, but I think it's something that, in general, it's quite nice to be cultivated. Because certainly for myself, when I try to do more regular meditation, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 a day, these things like that, then I have noticed a change in myself that, you know, it's not always that you can keep your cool, but every now and again, it just feels that there is more mental energy and just that stability. Because what I find often when you come across this is that we fluctuate. One moment you'll be like, yes, I can do everything, and next moment it's like, I cannot. And then you go into that phase, and then you fluctuate, and then it's just, you know, and I find that meditation for me, of course this is not just one day, it doesn't eliminate this fluctuation, but it slows it down to a bit more of a gentle fluctuation, if you will. So rather than going from extreme to extreme, it's more, you know, of course I still have good days, I have bad days, I still get stressed, but I just find that amongst that stress I can manage things a bit better because the fluctuations are not that great. Sure, that's easy for me to say now, and you know, it may not be the best time to go into deep meditation because you obviously you've got lots of things that you want to do now, and then, you know, trying to tell you to, you know, spend half an hour to sit and meditate, you may find it more stressful than it is helpful. But I do find that, you know, if you're spending an hour going around in circles, it might be worth your 5-10 minutes trying to sit down, meditate, or walk, do walking meditation to just calm yourself. What I find in myself as well is, you know, sometimes maybe 5 minutes is not enough. Because if you just think about it, right, say, you know, you just, even, let's say you try and catch a bus, you run for a bus, right? It may even take you 5 to 10 minutes to actually catch your breath, much less to say all that things that's going around in your head. It's not going to just, everything's just going to settle down in 5 minutes. And 5 minutes is an arbitrary number, you know. Maybe your 5 minutes is his 10 minutes, it might be my 15 minutes. And I've noticed, say, at the start of this talk today, when we say, let's all start meditating, I don't know, but you can hear maybe your own breathing or the person's next to you's breathing. No one's breathing straight away goes, there'll be, let's take a nice deep breath. And everyone goes, and then after that, the breathing goes, it's not until you drag out to almost maybe 10, 15 minutes that breathing then becomes more gentle, like a, it's slower, it's calmer, it's more steady. Sometimes you just need a bit more time to settle down. For example, you know, you stir up a muddy pool, right? It takes time for the dust to settle. You know, it's not just going to, you can't just say, I want you to settle faster, so therefore settle faster. But I think if you've developed a habit of meditation, and I mean, maybe look at it this way, right? If your going around in circles period is 1 hour, it might be worth trying to meditate for half an hour. You still save 30 minutes, right? And if it works, it's pretty good. And if it doesn't, then you haven't wasted your full hour. yeah, and I mean, that might be a strategy that works for me. You know, and I think I would like and hope that meditation is a answer for a lot of things, but it's not. And to be honest, I think these days there's a hype about mindfulness meditation and how mindfulness is, you know, mindfulness releases stress, mindfulness is a cure for this. I'm like, as a medical person, I'm like, no, that's not possible. All right, you have an infection. Mindfulness is not going to make the bacteria go away. But, sure, mindfulness certainly has got calming effects, because what happens is you divert your attention to, say, your breath, your abdomen, the rising and falling. You still get a certain sense of peace and calm, okay? And, you know, if you try meditating in the morning, it might be different than meditating in the afternoon. It's a bit hotter, maybe a bit more stuffy, maybe you're a bit more refreshed in the morning. You know, at different times of the day, different conditions, you know, you'll find your meditations different. But I still think that it's worthwhile to put in some time and effort into it. And if you're tired, maybe you really need to catch up with sleep first. It's a reality. It's, you know, it's a physical thing. Of course, don't then sleep for 3 days, because I think people sometimes sleep to procrastinate as well. But I'm tired, I will catch up on my sleep and continue. And you wake up like 2 days later. It's like, oh, are you refreshed now? No, I'm still tired, I need more sleep. I'm like, no, you don't. You need to get up. Yeah, so really, I think it really depends on how you are. And if you notice that that's a pattern, then maybe it's worthwhile, you know, trying some meditation. I mean, other things are more practical tips, like what, you know, prioritize, write them down, list them down. You know, if you have a clear idea of what you're trying to do, then maybe it's a bit easier, because, and I think this reflects in, our environment affects us as well, right? Like if your room is very cluttered, you know, you feel more, I don't know, maybe when the time you're stressed, it just feeds back more and you just feel more frustrated, just like, I don't know where my things are, it just adds on additional stress. And maybe writing things down is just a good way of listing what you actually need to accomplish instead of trying. It's visualization rather than actually, you know, going around in circles. Yeah. Ask your friends for help. Sorry if that doesn't directly answer your question, but I think these are some things that I've come across that may or may not be helpful for you. Hello, yes?
Thanks so much for the talk.
That's right.
Sorry, we are on the line.
No, that's okay, that's okay.
I'd like to ask about expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
What are some ways to manage our expectations?
I think it's only normal for us to have expectations. After all, we are human. At the start, I did say that, you know, it's natural we do have them, but I think it's our attachment to it that creates a problem. There's a few aspects. I think first of all is it a realistic expectation in the first place? Like I gave the story of, you know, wanting to buy a car for $500. Maybe it's not realistic. It's not feasible. And I think that sort of expectation is doomed to start with. Like you will be stressed because you're never going to achieve that. And I think sometimes we need to have a good hard look at ourselves. For example, you know, if you're always behind studies, you know, say let's take this to a primary school level, right? Let's say you're all in primary three, but throughout primary one and two, you've always been fooling around, playing around, you know, you've never done your homework. You still manage to pass somehow, but when it comes to exams, you don't score very well. Because why? Because you've missed out on the last 2 years. And say you've determined now, you want to change, and then you put in a lot of effort, but maybe what you're doing is still catching up. You're not actually following the progress. You're still trying to catch up. So then, even though you put in a lot of effort, you know, it's still trying to make up for those lost times. So I think to know yourself and to know where you're lacking, I think it's the first step in... It's like the Four Noble Truths, right? The Four Noble Truths says there is suffering, there is the cause of suffering, there is the end of suffering, and there's the way to end suffering. I think this is a really, really good teaching because you need to identify where the problem is first. Sorry, you need to actually acknowledge that there is a problem, and then you need to find out what caused this problem, and then, yes, there is a way to end this problem, but you actually need to work on the path to end this suffering, to work on this problem. So, if you have unrealistic expectations, I think the first thing is maybe there is a problem. Like to find out why we're not reaching that your expectations. Is it because you haven't put in enough effort? Maybe because you're catching up? Maybe it's the wrong technique? And then after that, then we can work towards getting it. So that's why at the start I felt that maybe a goal is a better description than expectations. Because I think with expectations, there's always going to be that attachment or that belief that you want it to happen this way. Whereas I think with a goal, you work towards it, you aim towards it. And you may or may not achieve it, but it's you're working towards this goal. Maybe in some ways it's similar, maybe not, but from, you know, maybe it's my English, but I think... You know, if we look at it that way, then I think the sense of expectation, it's probably a little bit less, and it's probably more manageable. Sure, we still get disappointed when we don't get what we would like to, but it's probably not as bad as, you know, having that expectation as opposed to trying to achieve that goal or work towards that goal. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I don't know if that helps, but hope it does. Thank you. Yeah. Anything else? No? And so, if none of you remember anything, it's okay. There's some vitamin C here. It's for you guys. At least stay healthy in this weather. It's sugarless, by the way. And you know, at least take some before you go for exams. Don't fall sick. Looking after your health is also just as important. Yep. Thank you.